Welcome to Truth Be Found. I'm professional investigator Justin Yentis. Here we cut through the noise, dig deep, and uncover what others overlook. If you're ready to roll up your sleeves and get to the bottom of the story, you've come to the right place. Let's get to work. When Kilmar Abrego Garcia was removed from the United States in March of this year without a full legal process, it shocked those who understand how important our protections really are. His case is a red flag and should concern everyone. Across America, the right to due process, the fundamental promise that no one can have life, liberty, or property taken away without a fair legal procedure, is being ignored. And it's not just undocumented immigrants at risk. Every single person within the U.S. borders, citizen, non-citizen, green card holders, undocumented persons, even the accused, are protected by this principle. Now, I want to say that this isn't an immigration story, but it's a deeper story about what happens when the government sidesteps the Constitution, cuts corners, and trades fairness for political points. Originally, this concept stems from the Magna Carta from over 800 years ago, but in the United States, this concept is in the 14th Amendment, which is what keeps our government from descending into tyranny. It is a system of rules, of evidence, and rights that protects all of us. Today is a special show that Truth Be Found is doing with Doug Passan, one of my favorite legal minds and the host and producer of the Set for Sentencing podcast, which honestly I feel is a must-listen show for everyone who works in criminal defense. And we have Angel Garcia, who's joining us today. As our regular listeners know, Angel is a former gang member who has seen firsthand how due process works in the legal system. So we're going to break down how due process, in addition to the separation of powers, is supposed to work, what happens when it's stripped away, and why every American, no matter their background, should care when justice is rushed or denied. So before we discuss Kilmar's story in detail, it's essential to understand that our country is founded on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and binding legal precedent. We also need to understand the separation of powers, which provides checks and balances to our government. We don't want a tyrannical monarch with unchecked power. So Doug, let's start with you. Since you're an expert in this field, why don't you explain these two concepts so all of our listeners can understand, you know, the baseline that we're working from. And I'll say between the listeners of Truth Be Found and those from Set for Sentencing, I know we've got a wide array of expertise and levels of experience in civics and in the legal field. So if you could give us a good overview of those concepts, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely. And so first of all, thanks for having me. Angel, thanks for being here. When Justin and I were dreaming about this, you know, I'm, I guess, freaking out is a legal term if I could use it about what is happening to our democracy. And Kilmar Garcia Abrego, Abrego Garcia, is the poster child for, I mean, you, in your opening, you talked about descent into tyranny. Make no bones about it. He is the poster child for our descent into tyranny. And what is happening, and I know that I'm going to get to your question, but I got to preface this whole thing just from where I'm coming from. Sure. And why I really, really am so grateful to be with you two gentlemen today. What is happening is a page ripped out of the authoritarian playbook. We have courts, we have due process, we have a system. It's been working, hasn't been perfect, but it's been working the way it's designed to work for generations. Mm-hmm. And now this lawless administration says we're rounding people up and we're shipping them out. And this is what they're doing, is they're starting on the fringes of society with the most vulnerable people that don't have full legal status to be here. And they're testing the waters to see how much society is going to scream about it. And that's why you hear them saying, oh, is this really the hill that you want to die on, defending a gang member and blah, blah, blah? Fuck yeah, this is the hill I want to die on, because this is where it starts. Mm-hmm. And they want to test the waters to see how far they can go with this. So it starts with this gentleman, and then it keeps going. I mean, we just heard in the news yesterday that they deport a mom who doesn't have status with her two citizen, U.S. citizen children, ages 4 and 7. And they say, well, we wouldn't want to separate the families. Bullshit. The father, who is a citizen, was there saying, my daughter, my children need to stay in this country, A, because they're citizens, and B, because my four-year-old has cancer, mm-hmm. and she's getting treatments. And if you send her to Guatemala, she's going to fucking die. And they said, sorry, and they put these two children on a plane with their mom to Guatemala. They're U.S. citizens. So we've already seen it starts with someone without status and, again, vulnerable. These children don't have a voice of their own. They were denied any contact with their lawyers. They had lawyers, and they put them on a plane, and they shipped them out, and not even with her meds, this four-year-old girl. So do you see that this is a descent into tyranny is happening already? It starts with someone like Mr. Garcia Abrego, I keep mixing that up, and it just goes from there. So if every single American doesn't wake up and stand the post for this person now, they could be next. Mm-hmm. And so as a defense lawyer, I have this podcast, Set for Sentencing. Thanks for the awesome plug. My job is to help educate my people about what we can do in any practical way. Now, I don't do immigration law. I'm never going to be in immigration court. We have plenty of people that do. There's a huge overlap between what I do and immigration law because, you know, the federal laws and there's criminal immigration laws. Which, by the way, if Mr. Abrego Garcia had committed any crime, he could have been prosecuted, but clearly he didn't. But my point is this: the thing that they're using to deny this gentleman of any due process is this gang, this label that they've slapped on him of you're in a gang. Mm-hmm. And because you're in a gang, you're a terrorist, you're a threat to American security, and we're going to deport you under this archaic Alien Enemies Act of 1798. And so first of all, Congress, you should be fucking revoking that act right now because this administration has proven they can't have nice things. They don't get these toys to do this, but that's another aside, but go ahead.
And that brings us to the separation of powers issue.
There's going to be a lot of F words. I don't know if someone's got to edit these out.
That's okay.
If there's children listening, I'm sorry, anybody who knows me, but
if there's children
listening,
they're going to get a great eye-opening.
I think I've said the F word about six times, but who's counting?
So talking about the separation of powers, so you mentioned Congress has to revoke that Alien Enemies Act. Could you explain what the separation of powers is? I know it's in the first three articles of the Constitution that delineates the executive, judicial, and legislative branches.
Yeah, well, I hope that Donald Trump is listening because clearly he doesn't understand separation of powers. Mm-hmm. But it's quite simple. There are three co-equal branches of government. Co-equal means equal power, not one over the other. One is the executive. That's where Trump resides. That's mm-hmm. where the DOJ resides. Pam Bondi resides. That's where ICE resides. That's where DEA resides. That's where FBI and all those other letters that you want to get. All the law enforcement. And this is the branch charged with enforcing the law. Mm-hmm.
So when you mention the executive branch and you mention these folks, you know, we're 100 days into this last administration, and so we've had a lot of people appointed to various positions. You got Pete Hegseth, you've got
just threw up Kristen my mouth. keep going.
Well, so all of these people that folks have heard about in the news, those are all part of the executive branch that are appointed by the president.
Yeah. So executive branch is charged with enforcing the law. The legislative branch, which is Congress, mm-hmm. Senate, and House, their job is to make the laws. They pass the laws. And so they could have the power to repeal that Alien Enemies Act. And so they pass the laws. And then, of course, the judiciary, who is interpreting the laws, mm-hmm. right? So they have the final say in whether a law is constitutional or unconstitutional, whether, you know, a person has violated the law, what their sentence should be, all those judicial determinations.
So when you say that these are co-equal branches, that means just what it sounds like, that one is not over the other.
Right.
That the president and the executive branch in its complete role has the same power as the judicial or the legislative.
That is exactly how the framers designed it, and that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
But what's happening today, obviously, is, well, you know, Trump's team is in charge of Congress, so mm-hmm. the Democrats have no power because they're not in control. Mm-hmm. if they win in the midterm elections, then Trump will have one more branch of government that he can ignore because that's what his MO is. And we've seen it with the judiciary, and we've seen it in this case.
Right.
The Supreme Court said, not good what you're doing here. Bring him back. Or, you know, make this right, you know, and they have raised two middle fingers to the Supreme Court.
Right. And that's why I agreed with you that this is a good test case for discussion, because here we have the executive branch acting, utilizing a law that was implemented by the legislature, but the judiciary branch has opposed the implementation and how this law has been utilized, and the executive has ignored it.
Right. And the judiciary has traditionally, we saw this in the first term too, they're the last guardrail.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that can keep power in check. This is all about checks and balances.
Right.
Their job is to check his power. Now, we used to live in a country where norms and respect for history and respect for the Constitution applied, which is to say when the Supreme Court issues an order, you say, well, I got to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
They're a co-equal branch of government. I don't got to like it. I can keep litigating it fairly in court if I have those means. But otherwise, when a court says do something, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this government survives. That's how checks and balances work. So if they're not going to follow court's orders, then where's the guardrail? Mm-hmm. The guardrails are off. And now we see in this case, in another podcast entirely, but you know, disregarding a court order was a bridge too far. And now they're putting a judge in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're trying to do, just like testing the waters with how far they can go with this deportations, they're testing the waters is how badly can they hobble, dismantle, paralyze, cripple, and you know, the judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
Starts with no, we're not following your orders, and ends with them in a jail cell.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, I've worked with people in the Trump administration or those that are close to it, very high-ranking politicians that are I'd say consider in Trump's inner circle. And, you know, we took a case to one of them about a year and a half ago because we had a problem with what was going on in the Bureau of Prisons. And the congressman was very cautious because he could not involve himself with the workings of the judiciary branch. And I think I called you on the way to that appointment, Doug. And so he did not want to involve himself or get in sideways in any respect with what the judicial branch was doing. And so here we have something completely different where the executive branch is pretty much ignoring the court orders of the judicial branch.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing happens because we could talk about BOP till the day is long and how messed up that is. But I have the same problem when I go to a judge in a case and say, Judge, the BOP is not doing X, Y, and Z. And a lot of times the judge says, well, they're in the executive branch and I'm not going to get involved in that. But the truth is they can get involved and they should get involved sometimes. And the congressperson can get involved and should get involved too. There's nothing wrong with, you know, advocating for what you believe is right and fair. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, no one has to listen to you, but there's no reason, earthly reason, this congressperson shouldn't have had the guts to, you know, reach out and speak up and at least help.
So as a big part of this...
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But putting checks and balances aside, that's called civil discourse. Like, we're a country, we're all in this together. We should be talking to each other. We should be working with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we're never going to agree all the time, but at least we had a conversation about it, and you know where I stand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going up in the ether now, too. And people are afraid to speak up.
Yeah, they are.
Fear and intimidation is the order of the day.
On that note, we had, you know, obviously this case with Abrego Garcia that we're kind of analyzing here as an example case has a lot to do with due process, which with, you know, me being a non-lawyer, I always explain that as just a fair and outlined legal process.
Yeah.
Could you shed more light on what due process is and how that applies in a criminal and in an immigration deportation setting?
Right. So I'll preface this by saying I'm not an immigration lawyer. So there are lawyers out there that know this stuff way better than I do. And I know that there is less due process when it comes to immigration proceedings generally. Criminal proceedings are supposed to be afforded the most due process because you're talking about taking away someone's liberty and sometimes even their life. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have higher burdens of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. All these mechanisms of proving an allegation in a court. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's before a jury, sometimes it's a judge. But the idea of being able to go into court and put your case on and have a neutral fact finder make a decision about what happened or what's a just outcome, that's due process. The fundamental two tenets of due process, quite simple. Notice, mm-hmm. an opportunity to be heard. Notice is, what are you charging me with? Or why are you fucking putting me on a plane in the middle of the night to San Salvador? Fuck you, we don't have to tell you anything. Mm-hmm. That's called no notice. I don't know what is happening and I don't know why it's happening. That's why we have indictment. You have to have a grand jury and in criminal case. You have to put somebody on notice of what you say is the problem is. Mm-hmm. And then you have to give them a chance to be heard, mm-hmm. to make their case. And I don't know that every one of these folks in immigration court is even entitled to a lawyer. They don't get public defenders like someone accused of a crime or anything like that. And, of course, a lot of these folks are living paycheck to paycheck. They aren't going to be able to go out and hire a lawyer. There are free legal services. And, by the way, it's a good time to plug Florence Immigrants Rights and Refugee Project. Mm-hmm. You know that agency? Oh, yeah. They do provide free legal assistance. I imagine they're working overtime with the ACLU.
Oh, yeah, but, probably.
That's just the bare minimum, notice and opportunity to be heard. And that both of those things totally non-existent in Kilmar Borrego-Garcia's case.
Okay. So for those that are listening here, can you explain how we deport people legally from the United States and how that contrasts with what happened to Borrego-Garcia?
Yes. And
I think that's important to know, like, yeah. why this issue has come up. I know I've seen online folks, you know, they're complaining because, you know, they feel like we're a bunch of bleeding hearts. We're, you know, going to bat for, you know, some spouse beating criminal immigrant, whatever,
yeah.
you know, and honestly, whether or not he's a gang member, whether or not he's committed crimes, whether or not he's here legally, illegally, doesn't matter. You know, we're dealing with due process. It applies to everyone. It applies to everyone within our borders, not just citizens. So how should this have gone down and how should this have happened and how did it happen?
Right. And just what I said earlier, it doesn't matter. They can say whatever they want. First of all, I don't believe everything they say. I'm not going to take the government's word that he's a gang member.
Right.
Not going to take the government's word that he's a wife beater. I want to see what's the evidence. So
yeah.
The point is what you said, everyone is entitled under our Constitution to due process. Doesn't even matter if they're a citizen or not, or if they're here legal or not. It says any person, mm-hmm. period. These are human beings and they're entitled to due process. Mm-hmm. So my understanding, again, I'm not the immigration lawyer, but my understanding for Borrego-Garcia was that he was here under an asylum claim. Mm-hmm. Is that your understanding as well? Okay. So they're saying he's a quote-unquote illegal. First of all, I fucking hate that term. We don't say that in our business mm-hmm. because it's dehumanizing. Mm-hmm. In the same way we used to call Vietnamese people gooks mm-hmm. and Japanese people nips and Jews kikes. Mm-hmm. You want to brand someone as an illegal, it makes them less of a human and easier to do the horrible things mm-hmm. that a government does to human beings. So he's a person who maybe didn't have full lawful status. Now, again, this is where my ignorance of the law comes in on immigration, but here's my understanding. When someone comes here claiming refugee status, they cross the border illegally, and that's the end of their illegality because they then surrender mm-hmm. to a Border Patrol agent or somebody in authority and say, I have a credible claim of fear, threat, death in my home country.
Correct.
And that's what he did.
Well, and what I don't know is if is because I believe he entered into the United States in 2012. And the documentation, at least that the DOJ put on its website, which everyone can go and download, the Prince George's County Police Department reports and some of his immigration documents, which, as a side note, I thought was very odd to put on the internet because
made this point before we went on the record that yes. The government is not in the practice of making all these documents public at the drop of a hat.
No, they're not.
They're not.
They're not. And I've gone into the U.S. Attorney's Office and read alien files, or A files as they're called. Huh. And we do it under supervision.
Yeah. There's an ICE agent there.
Of an ICE agent or one of the assistant U.S. attorneys staring at you, and you mark what you want copies of with a paperclip.
Yeah.
And ask if they will please copy it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that's this. Exactly this how it works. Head. These are like precious. But no, not under this administration.
No.
Well, what does that tell you, though? They need to justify their bad acts by trying to sway the public opinion and further this ugly narrative.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So my understanding is that he entered in at near McAllen, Texas, and that was in 2012, was busted for trespassing or loitering in 2019. At that point, he was found with a couple of gentlemen who they believed were MS-13 members from the Sailors Clique, which is one of the subcategories of MS-13, one of the subgroups.
So this is a police report somewhere that says when the police came upon him, he was with two other guys, and those guys were MS-13.
They were.
Okay.
They were.
So as my defense lawyer brain is saying, that's fine. Just because I'm hanging out with two guys doesn't mean I'm in their gang.
Correct.
Okay. So again, these are things that should be litigated in, if you had that opportunity to be heard, these are the kinds of arguments you'd be making.
Exactly. Okay. The other indicia or evidence of his gang membership was a bull's hat. Excuse me. I don't know. Actually, I don't know if it was a hat or a jacket, but it was something with the Chicago Bulls, and then also some tattoos which aligned with an MS-13 slogan, which is "Ver oír y callar," which means see nothing, or see, hear, and shut up.
Yeah, hear nothing, see nothing, say nothing.
Yeah,
and that's exclusive to MS.
Well, that's exclusive to a lot of people. I've seen Mexicans with that tattoo too. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen that tattoo on many people across all races, so that makes no sense.
Thank you.
And what about other gangs, other gang members, non-members of the Mara Salvatrucha?
Yeah, they have that tattoo. Okay. I mean, I know some personally.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I've seen it with white people,
mm-hmm.
black people, Mexican people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tattoo that basically with us is like, you hear nothing, you say nothing, and you see nothing. It's basically mm-hmm. amongst the hoods or the criminal world or whatever, not if we're in the streets, is that you don't say nothing. Mm-hmm. It's the code of silence.
Right.
That's all it is.
Now let's compare that to the tattoo that you've got on your arm. On your arm, you've got the Mexican Mafia patch.
Yes.
You've got two M's and 13 flames going in both directions.
Yes.
Outside of the Arizona Mexican Mafia, have you ever seen that tattoo on anyone?
No. No. Okay. Never.
Okay. Never. And did we establish Angel's past affiliation?
We have in prior episodes.
Yeah, in prior episodes. But that's why you're such an important witness here at this hearing, Angel, because you have firsthand experience. You're an expert in gang membership because you used to be in it. Wasn't MS-13 though, right? It was
No, but I know I've been around a lot of them.
But yes, yeah. Because Angel's, I mean, it's not a secret. You've been incarcerated, right?
Yes. So
in your time being incarcerated, you've probably encountered gangs of every stripe, right?
Every stripe,
including very closely to MS-13 in, I think it was Big Sandy.
Yes. Big Sandy, Florence, Colorado, and, mm-hmm. In Atwater too in California, so in Leavenworth as well. I've been in Leavenworth, so these gangs are there. I mean, they run under the the southern fly. They run under the California MS. So it's they're there. If the California MS is there, they're there.
Okay. So in your opinion, the fact that he's got some tattoos could mean he's in this gang, but it doesn't have to mean that.
No, it doesn't have to mean that.
All right. So what else would we look at? What else? How else would we make this determination? So he's hanging out with a couple of guys,
mm-hmm.
and they're not even, you said, his clique.
They're not.
Well, I don't. How would you know what his clique is anyway? Like, how do you?
Well, according to the police report, and again, this was something that, as a defense investigator, I would get and I would verify. You know, I've always right. tell folks that we're like, you know, fact checkers on crack.
Huh. Yeah. And this is, by the way, not to be lost and not to, like, give you an unsolicited plug, but I will, because if I'm a defense lawyer and I get, and this is why it's really important even for sentencing, we'll talk more about that, but I'm going to get a pre-sentence report in every sentencing that the probation office does, and they reviewed these police reports and they've incorporated them to this document. And if there's something in a police report that says so-and-so is a documented member of this gang, that's going in a pre-sentence report. And a lot of times I've had that, and my client says, oh, that's not true, I'm not. And I don't know how to go about proving that.
Mm-hmm.
And the question should be, why do I even have to? It matters. It matters at sentencing and beyond. We'll talk about that. But I would hire somebody like Justin, maybe even Angel, as an expert witness to shoot that allegation down, because you don't want somebody saddled with that label if it's not true.
Right.
So I would need you to do all this process and homework that you're doing.
Right.
So keep going.
It's true. And I don't know where I was in this. Oh, we were talking about how the validation process. And, you know, Angel and I went over this the other day. And I brought the Arizona DOC validation process with me.
Okay, that's the state prison
yes,
Department
state
of Correction.
Prison.
Exactly. Because it pretty much mirrors all of the other. I mean, the validation process is pretty similar nationwide.
Yeah.
So some of the areas that need to be identified or verified to validate someone as a gang member is inmate self-admission.
Yeah, there's a point system.
And we can have Angel explain some of these.
Okay, so there's a point system in the state mm-hmm. as an STG member. And it's changed. It's changed.
I don't mean to interrupt, but can I back you up for a second? Why is the DOC even going through this process to validate? What's the point? Why are they doing it?
To slam us down, to control.
No, when you say slam you down, you mean
it's to lock us down, put us in isolation, put right. us in supermax.
So a prison within a prison.
With a prison within a prison.
Right.
So and to try to control the yards. So that's a whole different thing we can get into
right.
in another time. But there's STG policy, which is a security threat group policy for DOC, is DO 806.
Mm-hmm.
So and this policy basically, it's changed where we're considered terrorists now.
Mm-hmm.
They put us as homegrown terrorists, and it's in there. So this means that they involve everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They involve the federal system. They involve federal law enforcement, state enforcement, any kind of law enforcement to come after us.
Mm-hmm.
So the SCG policy, there's a point system where you say a self-admission, tattoos, articles.
Now let's talk about the tattoo. So when you got validated, they took pictures. I've seen your pictures and
yes.
your multiple cases that we've worked.
Yes.
And they take pictures of your arm, your neck,
and my
back. Exactly. To document the fact that you do have these tattoos, that
yes.
they are identified as identifying marks of the Arizona Mexican Mafia.
Yes.
And that they are on you and when they were placed on you.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And that, to me, that automatically slammed me down. My tattoos always slam me down. There's
right.
there's no question about it.
One of the things that is group or terror-related symbolism, I think this would be in line with, for example, the Vinlanders or the skinheads or whatnot. You know, you've got the runes, these Nordic religious tattoos and markings that they have on their fingers, their arms, or their jewelry.
Yeah, so to us, it's the Aztec culture. I have nothing
right.
but Mexican Aztec culture all over my body.
Mm-hmm.
So that automatically identifies me as a Mexican Mafia member or an associate, even if they don't have the patch on them, even if they don't have a patch on them, if you have certain Aztec tattoos on you, you're automatically an associate or you're a soldier for the AME. Mm-hmm. It all depends on what tattoo you have.
Right.
Which there, it's been watered down a little bit, but it does happen. The first thing they do when you get into the system, take off your shirt. You have the SSU, which is the Special Security Unit, take pictures of you, and they identify this. Mm-hmm. And then they say, okay, who are you in contact with? Who do you hang around with? And this, all this is a point system. If you have articles, if your case was in the news, if your case, if you're in the system and your case was a criminal syndicate case where some people weren't even involved, you've been involved in some of these cases where some of the people that were involved had no kind of tattoos, no, right. They'd never been to prison, but they got caught up because mm-hmm. we got them caught up mm-hmm. by using them to move money, to pass messages
right.
or whatnot. So when they come to the system, that's it. They're automatically Mexican Mafia members. It doesn't matter if there's tattoos or not. They were associated with it.
Some of the other issues that they use to validate are rosters. I know
RCs, which is called a roll call.
Roll call lists.
Have you ever heard about a roll call?
No.
A roll call list is what you call a membership list or a non-member. So when we're slammed down, us members, so we send word to the yards. We want a roll call list of who's all on that yard that is Mexican-American, that rolls under the Mexican-American flag of the Arizona MA. Hmm. So we want a roll call list. And this doesn't mean that everybody on that list is a member or an associate. We just want to know what Mexicans are. So these lists are intercepted. Hmm. And when they're intercepted, these lists are considered a membership list.
Right. You know, I brought one out, Doug, to Angel. It was a couple of years ago because I had a client that had some emails that were intercepted. And that's another one of the validation issues is
communication
group or terrorism related documents authored by the inmate, including text messages, emails, and material included in any electronic format. So
I think that's a crock of shit, too. Well, the terrorism thing. Why do they say terrorism thing? It's a roll call list.
Right.
How is that a terrorist?
But so the list that I brought out to Angel was a list of Mexican Mafia members that were in, I don't want to say bad standing, but it was a
power struggle
in a feud.
It was an intersectoral power struggle of power. So it's other Mexican Mafia members trying to take power from another faction of the Mexican Mafia. Hmm.
So that list would have been helpful to the validation process because it lists many different validated Mexican Mafia members and the perceived ways that these MA members had broken the Mexican Mafia rules. Hmm. So these are all...
It sounds like the list could contain people that aren't.
Yes.
Members,
yes. Yeah. They definitely can, and they definitely did.
Then they
did. I didn't ask to be on your list, but now I'm on it. I'm slapped with a gang.
Yeah. So say for instance, if I make this list and I pass it to somebody, and I just put your name on it, and you're an attorney.
Yeah.
I put your name on it.
What does the law enforcement do into the DOC as an attorney? That's what I'd like to know. But go ahead.
But
wait, oh, you put my name. I'm not in the DOC. You can put my name on the list and I don't even have to be inside the DOC.
Yes, that's it.
And this thing you said about terrorists, and you mentioned the word homegrown. Do they use that word? Homegrown terrorists? Okay, because that's the same language that Donald Trump is using to say we're looking into whether we can deport homegrown terrorists, meaning U.S. citizens who...
And that's what we're considered now.
Yeah.
They did this just within the last couple of years of the STG. They considered members of the Mexican Mafia or associates or anybody involved with them homegrown terrorists. Mm-hmm. And it's on there. It's in their policy. They made sure they put terrorism in there.
Do you see how this circle starts to widen and the creep sets in?
Mm-hmm.
They're coming. They just gonna keep going with it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, and I'll say one of the issues that, for example, the FBI was recently looking at was white men wearing Carhartt shirts. you know, as potential.
For those of you listening, Justin just pointed out the shirt that he's wearing. Is that a Carhartt shirt?
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay. It is.
We laugh, but when that's funny.
No, it's not funny because it's real.
Yeah, it's real.
And I'm experiencing it first time.
Right.
Even though I'm not a gang member no more, I've walked away from that life. But due to the fact of me not debriefing, mm-hmm. I'm still considered a member. Mm-hmm. So I'm still considered a homegrown terrorist.
By the government. Right.
Well, Angel, that's another point, though, because when you're talking about Mr. Abrego, these documents you're reading from what date did you say that was? 2009?
That he got arrested for trespassing in 2019.
Yeah. 2019.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess what my point is even if he was a gang member at some point in time, shouldn't you have to prove that he's still in a gang? And how do you prove that?
Right.
I mean, just the fact that he was in a gang as a dumb teenager and now he's here trying to do right and go through the process.
Right.
At what point do you stop have this label on you?
It's true. And a big difference between the Mexican Mafia and MS-13 is some of the MS-13 guys do walk away without a huge problem. They've got a saying in El Salvador, meetings or misa, meaning like either you're going to come to the MS-13 meetings and participate as a carnal, as a brother in our gang, or you're at your apostolic fundamental Christian church. And those are your two options. And so they have allowed for a lot of guys that have, you know, turned their lives around, that have gotten, you know, found God, who have become very religious, to step away. And the churches are their sanctuary, literally and figuratively. And so when, you know, but they still obviously carry the history that they had before. Some of them have the tattoos that they had before. They, you know, there's not a lot of tattoo removal in San Salvador. And so you've got people that still could have all of these markings and appear to the layman or to some outside observer as, you know, a boogeyman gang member, but that was an old life that they're no longer living.
Yeah.
And I think that brings up the issue about due process that really drives it home, because Angel could be, I mean, let's assume that what happened in El Salvador, you know, happens here, where, you know, the president rounds up everyone with tattoos, whether or not they're active or inactive, just for hanging around, just for being around gang members, because that's what happened in El Salvador, and we'll get into that in a bit. Angel would be at risk, because even though he has stepped away, he is not committing new crimes. He's not an active participant in the Mexican Mafia. In fact, he's done a lot of acts that could put him in bad standing with them, but he would still be rounded up under the same circumstances that Bukele is implementing in El Salvador, because there's not a due process right when the Constitution is suspended.
Well, it seems like that same thing that president is doing over in El Salvador seems like this president wants to do over here now.
Yeah.
Take everybody's rights, don't care.
Well,
if you got these tattoos, round them up, get them out of here.
And that's what we want to obviously bring to light, because it's not necessarily that we're cheerleading for Abrego Garcia because he's such a great guy and he's, you know, lived an exemplary life. I don't know. But there is a process to determine whether or not someone deserves incarceration, deportation, fines, criminal charges, and for those to play out.
But that's the court system's for.
Exactly. But that's why I wanted to that's why we're hosting this topic.
Right.
Because when those processes are skipped, that's when we come into some very grave problems.
Did we finish what the so-called case that they made in these disclosure documents? We have a sketchy, questionable tattoo. We have he's with two people. We have a bull's hat.
Right.
Okay.
And the CI and a confidential informant.
Who are always inherently reliable, never lie to get themselves out of trouble, very upstanding.
Exactly.
We call them snitches, and everybody knows in our business that you never take a CI's word for anything. You always want to verify what they're saying.
Exactly.
What's the CI saying? He's in a gang.
That he is in a, he is in MS-13.
And when did that CI say this?
In 2019.
2019. Okay.
So the cops called one of their informants. He said that yes, Kilmar was a member of MS-13. He had the rank of a chequeo, which is a kind of a regional shot caller rank. And that he was with a specific clique, a specific group of MS-13.
And this is all from an informant. This is just hearsay.
This exactly. And that was their argument.
And what do we know about this informant?
We've already said what we know about.
Because these are not like the scout leaders of troop, 412 and your clergy and your church. These are people who are up to no good and who have gotten themselves in hot water, and now they have currency and they try to say things about other people to get themselves out of trouble.
Exactly. So they're exactly.
Yeah.
And depending on who this informant is working for, what department, sometimes this is a full-time job because they're getting extreme amounts of money.
Yeah, they get paid sometimes to give us information.
A lot of money.
Whether it's true or not.
We've had an informant in our case.
Oh yeah, we've had many informants. Yeah,
and I've seen that some of them got paid
a lot of money.
Some of them were in the $80,000 to $100,000 just to testify against me.
It's a terrible, terrible system.
Oh yeah. Well,
so are all those things happening still in McAllen? By the way,
as far as the
arrest, the CI.
Well, this happened in Maryland.
Oh,
he came across in McAllen, and then made his way to Maryland.
Okay,
and so that's where the arrest happened. Yeah, that's where everything happened. That's where he's
Not for nothing. So here's where I'm not positive of the facts. I hope I'm not talking out of turn, but it sounds like I've heard that he did get put into some sort of immigration proceedings because they
in 2019.
In 2019,
correct.
I'm sorry, who was president in 2019? I forgot.
Was it Biden?
No, it was Trump in 2019.
Oh, it was Trump.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. This was during the Trump administration. Trump won.
So he gave him proceedings then.
Yeah.
And this time
let him
just
out because they determined he did have a credible fear and threat of being returned to El Salvador.
Correct.
Meaning he had some due process. Mm-hmm. He went into an immigration proceeding. He made his case, and some judge says, "Yeah, I think you have presented this case, so I'm going to now parole you into the country so that you can continue to litigate getting your full status."
Exactly.
So, in my opinion, and you may have an immigration lawyer in here that tells me I'm an idiot and full of shit, but in my opinion, he's no longer illegal at that point.
No, he's not.
Because the judge has released him and given him permission to be here.
Right.
He doesn't have a green card. He doesn't have citizenship, but he's not a quote-unquote illegal.
No, he's not.
He had every right.
He's not illegal. He's not undocumented.
He had every right to be here.
Correct.
When he was swept up and thrown in prison in El Salvador.
Correct.
Okay. Without due process.
This conversation is far from over. Due process, the rule of law, and the separation of powers aren't just legal terms. They're the backbone of any fair and functioning society. What we've seen in Kilmar Abrego Garcia's case is not just a failure of process, it's a dangerous precedent that affects all of us. There's so much more to unpack, and that's why we'll be back in the next episode for part two of this important conversation. I'll be joined again by Doug Passan and Angel Garcia as we dive deeper into the legal chaos, the immigration system, and the real-life consequences of what happens when power goes unchecked. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the rest of the story. And as always, stay curious, keep asking questions, and together we will uncover the truth. Thank you for tuning in to Truth Be Found. The hunt for answers never stops, and neither do we. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us online to stay in the loop. Remember, truth has a way of coming to light. Until next time, keep your head up and your eyes sharp.